Hello, I'm Rick Blue. This is number 0497 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0497. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Klaus Bobel, who is a fourth-generation butcher in Germany. He just opened an all-bratwurst-themed bed and breakfast. But why?
People all over the world come to me and talk about food, are interested in my food culture, in German sausage called Bratwurst. This is one reason I like this, to feel like holiday with guests all over the world in my hometown. And the second reason, I have a very old house near Bab. This is not renovated the last 70 years. And so I have to do to new some things or to destroy it. And so I decide to make a Bratwurst hotel.
James Gere is the author of Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It.
When we tend to think of wit, we typically think of it as like being funny, and that is certainly part of what wit is about. But I think more than making jokes, wit is really essentially making connections between things that may seem different on the surface but have some kind of hidden similarity or hidden relationship. And I think from that point of view, wit is more like a kind of intelligence than it is a sense of humor, a state of mind, really.
Dr. Nicole Kelly, author of Charming Cheaters, talks about sociopaths and psychopaths.
So really there's a spectrum. It kind of goes from monster manipulator to just outright monster. Psychopaths score a very high score on a scale that can only be done by professionals, but sociopaths are more likely to be out and about and running our country, our companies, and our churches. Sociopaths often have better self-control, better impulse control, and they're better able to wear a mask to fit into society.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0497, was Rick Blue, half of Canada's favorite comedy musical duo, Bowser and Blue. They have a lot of upcoming shows, including March the 2nd at the Morin Center in Quebec City, and March the 30th for the 50th anniversary of my alma mater, Dawson College. You can check out their website at bowserandblue.com to find out more dates. And if you've never heard of Bowser and Blue, you've definitely got to go to their website and hear some of their work, because they are Canada's favorite comedy musical duo for a reason. They're very funny. Thank you very much, Rick, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A dispute over a box of Cheez-Its provoked a DeKalb County, Georgia man to do the unthinkable on February the 12th. As 32-year-old Jeremy Lamar Wyatt, his brother, and 61-year-old mother argued over the salty snacks, Wyatt went outside, locked his family inside the home, poured gasoline on the front steps, and set it on fire. Wyatt's brother was able to lower his mother down from a second-story window, and both escaped without injury. Wyatt, who had reportedly been enjoying some adult beverages with his Cheez-Its, was taken into custody at the scene and charged with arson and criminal damage to property. An anger management course wouldn't hurt either in the sentencing, I think. You know, it's interesting that Jeremy seems to lack the maturity that Cheez-Its claims its own cheese has.
We take the time for our cheese to mature before we bake it into every delicious cracker. Because at Cheez-It, real cheese matters.
Yeah, they don't let their cheese out before it matures. Here's hoping the state does the same with Jeremy. A British nudist group is organizing an attempt at breaking the Guinness World Record for having more than 100 people ride a roller coaster while naked. British Naturism said it's hoping at least 103 people will participate in the attempt to break the record for most naked riders on a theme park ride at Blackpool Pleasure Beach. The current record was set in 2010 when 102 naked people took a ride on the Green Scream roller coaster at Adventure Island in Southend-on-Sea, Essex, England. The new attempt will take place on the notoriously bumpy Grand National roller coaster. Participants are being asked to bring a bathrobe, flip-flops, or tennis shoes, a towel to sit on, and a bag to store their clothes. The record attempt will be followed by a skinny dip event at the Sandcastle Water Park, which will allow people to ride the water slides in the buff for 3 hours. Wow. I hope they don't follow this up with naked skydiving. The one thing that always garners questions about when women skydive naked is people on the ground asking each other about where that whistling noise is coming from. Yeah. A man wearing a gorilla costume broke into a Louisiana residence, according to cops who fought with a suspect after finding him hiding under a mattress. The investigation began when Sulphur City police got a call about a suspicious person in an all-black costume walking the streets and going into residents' yards. When officers arrived on the scene, they learned a male subject was looking through windows of homes and sneaking through yards. "Who goes around in a gorilla suit peeking into windows?" said one resident. When officers located the suspect, later identified as 34-year-old Jeremy Joseph Moran, he fled into a nearby residence, ignoring police demands to stop. During a subsequent search of the home, cops found Moran wearing a black gorilla suit. Moran tussled with cops, trying to handcuff him, but he was eventually subdued and placed under arrest. He was charged with multiple offenses, including unauthorized entry in an inhabited dwelling, methamphetamine possession, resisting a police officer with violence or force, and wearing a mask or hood in public. Maybe he was just looking for the gorilla his dreams. Yeah. Police in southern Germany say a slaughterhouse worker suffered serious injuries after being kicked in the face by a dead cow. In a statement, police say the cow was killed, according to regulations, at an abattoir in Eilen and hung on a meat hook for further processing. Police said the carcass then kicked the man in the face, apparently due to a nervous impulse that experts say isn't uncommon. The 41-year-old worker was hospitalized. Now, you'd think a story like this would be a load of bull, but it's not. It's just an utter tragedy. You know, if that guy ended up with a black eye, what are the odds he'd want to put a raw steak on it to help heal? Although, truth be told, putting a steak on a black eye is probably the fastest way of getting an E. coli infection. Okay, speaking of meat, one of the things I do each week on this show is find interesting stories for the Stuff File News. And every once in a while, I find a story to consider that when I check it out, I want to find out more. And by finding out more, I mean turning the subject of the story into a guest, which brings us to our first guest on this program. Klaus Bubel is a fourth-generation butcher who works in Ritterbach, Germany. He has created a hotel called BB&BB, which stands for Bubel Bratwurst Bed and Breakfast. It's a seven-room hotel that entices travelers to experience Northern Bavaria's most popular dish, bratwurst. Klaus joins us on the line right now from Ritterbach. Hi, Klaus.
Hi. Greetings to Canada and all over the world.
Thanks for being on the program with us. How did you come up with this idea to start this hotel?
There are two reasons. First, I like to go to holiday, to speak with foreign people, to try food from other countries. And so I decide why only this experience when I am in holidays. I make this location for food in other countries in Germany, and people all over the world come to me and talk about food, are interested in my food culture, in German sausage called bratwurst. This is one reason I like this, to feel like holiday with guests all over the world in my hometown. And the second reason, I have a very old house near pub. This is not renovated the last 70 years. And so I have to do to new some things or to destroy it. And so I decide to make a bratwurst hotel.
Now, when you say bratwurst hotel, it's not just the fact that people get to come to the hotel and they get to dine on what you make. It also is themed that way. So the bed linen, the walls, the decor, everything is bratwurst. How did you come up with that?
I like this. I don't like hotels which have only a white wall, water, and electricity. I like special things, and so I decide to make a hotel room with bratwurst theme. All is bratwurst. The wall, the soap in the bathroom, all things is bratwurst. Bratwurst decorations, and in the restaurant, I call it not restaurant, I called it Wurstaurant. So you can only have different dishes with bratwurst.
Okay, so describe the room for us. For instance, I understand you have pillows that are shaped like bratwurst.
Yes, I have pillows like a large bratwurst. I have a paper on the wall where are different kind of my bratwurst printed. I have a table. In the middle of the table is under a glass a bratwurst tin. I have a real bratwurst over each bed. So I not only say for marketing sleeping under bratwurst heavens, and then this is real. You can sleep under bratwurst heaven and take this heaven to you and eat it.
Okay, that's the part I wanted to ask you about. You've got bratwurst actually hanging over the beds, real bratwurst. So I'm assuming this has changed daily?
No, it's a smoked one. It's a bratwurst made in style of salami. You can store this without fridge. And so can hang for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and it's no problem. But most time it's changed daily by my guests who catch them.
How much does it cost to rent a room, to have to stay a night at your B&B?
A double room costs 98 euros, including breakfast.
98 euros, including breakfast. And I'm assuming that bratwurst is on the menu morning, noon, and night?
Yes, morning, noon, and night, all the time you see bratwurst. And if you want, you can make a bratwurst workshop and produce with me your own sausage and eat a 6-course bratwurst meal, no problem.
So I'm going out on a limb to say that I'm guessing you don't get a lot of vegetarians staying at your hotel.
No, but if somebody wants to come and is vegetarian, I collect pigs. And so I have many pigs in a glass, behind glass, which are from wood or glass pigs or, I don't know, tailored pigs. And so he can sleep before his pigs if he wants. They say are without meat.
Without meat. Okay. When fourth generation butcher, so obviously this is something that is literally in your blood, going back four generations. It's a very serious business when you do anything for four generations. When you decided to do this, what did friends and family say when you said, I'm going to start a sausage hotel?
Oh, some things I say it's great. They are very happy and say it's a good idea. Other friends say, I'm not sure if this runs. But now most people are happy and say it's a good idea. They like it. They see foreign people all over the world come. And in the first 4 months, I have people nearly all over the world, but not from Canada.
Well, hopefully we can change that with people listening to this right now. I saw the story on several places online. You were also got some coverage on CNN. What's it been like since you've received so much worldwide attention?
I have bookings all over the world from tourists. I'm a small hotel, and I think most people see this, do not book at once. they are waiting till summer, till they make holiday, or a holiday from North America to Europe is not a sea hotel now. Book now and come tomorrow. So the most things booking is for summer or for next year. But it's very interesting. All people all over the world ask for rooms. Public TV stations and radio stations like you ask for an interview. And so it's good I speak English, but some questions I could not answer because I do not speak Chinese or Japanese language.
Well, what's it like in the area where you live? Rittersbach is near Nuremberg, I understand. So how much of a touristy community is it? I would assume that just the fact that you're getting a lot of attention, you're bringing attention to an area that might not necessarily always see so much.
This is right. It's not a famous touristic sites like Nuremberg or Rothenburg are near to me, but not in my village or my region, only a little bit touristic like hiking or cycling. But now people all over the world come to Rittersbach. They never come without Bratwurst Hotel here because there is no castle or something else.
Now, you have everything sausage, as I said, in your menu. You even have, I understand, sausage ice cream? How do you make that?
Yes, I have sausage ice cream, sausage soup. I have sausage for the dessert, different kinds. I like sausage apple, which I baked apple with sausage filling. Different things with sausage you do not expect, but you can try it, or you can make your own sausage.
What is your favorite bratwurst dish?
My favorite is a classic, normal bratwurst with a very old recipe from my grandfather. This is my favorite dish.
Mm. Well, congratulations on opening up your butcher-inspired, bratwurst-inspired hotel. How long have you been open?
I'm open since 23 of September last year.
Okay, so it's recent. And you've been busy all the way through since then?
Yes, I'm busy. Not sold out, but busy. Most rooms are booked all the time, but there is enough rooms left for persons who want to come from Canada to me.
You haven't been open for a year yet, so I guess you don't know what might be your busy season.
Oh, busy season, I don't know, because I have not opened in a summer season. Summer 2019 is my first summer season, and I expect more than in winter, because here it's no snow, it's no skiing, it's more a summer touristic season.
Is there any kind of bratwurst festival that takes place in your community or near your community during the year?
Yes, there is a large bratwurst festival 50 or 60 kilometers abroad north of Nuremberg called Bratwurst Gipfel, where different butchers make different kinds of bratwurst.
And when does that take place?
This is in Pegnitz. I don't know the exact time in May this year.
So you could have a very busy May coming your way.
Yes, I think, but I have busy enough in my hotel because I am the owner, and for each guest I have time to talk about with my guests. It's a small hotel because I like to talk with my guests, not only looking that it runs and my employer works with you. I'm the owner. I want to talk with my guests about bratwurst, about their food, about their food culinary from all over the world. All my guests can bring to me a recipe of their own sausage, and I collect this and put it in one room on the wall, different sausage recipes from all over the world. So I want to be in my hotel most time, so guests see the owner and the bratwurst man.
It sounds like you're having a great time, and continued success with all you're doing. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for your interview.
Klaus Bubel, the fourth generation butcher who was also the owner of the Bubel Bratwurst Bed and Breakfast. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0497, and you'll find links to Klaus's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come, we'll talk to the author of Wit's End. Plus, we'll meet Dr. Nicole Kelly, author of Charming Cheaters. We have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the Stuff File news. Oh, there's nothing worse than being ripped off. But police were still left quite surprised when a woman called in to report that her drug dealer had sold her brown sugar instead of cocaine. She told officers in Craigavon, North Ireland, that she paid £200 for the transaction, only to realize that she had been scammed afterwards. The police station posted on their Facebook page, "We said it before and we'll say it again. Drug dealers care about nothing other than lining their own pockets." They went on to say, granted, it's not exactly the sort of slick wheeling and dealing business savvy that would see you go the distance on The Apprentice, but it shouldn't surprise anyone that drug dealers are scammers. They then added that anyone who has been scammed by their dealer and would like payback should call Crime Stoppers or 101. "A dishonest drug dealer, what's this world coming to?" the police finished their post with. Now, I don't have the actual tape of the police call, but they did share a transcript. It went something like this. "Caller, I've been scammed. Police, okay, are you out of any money? Caller, yeah, I paid over £200 and got brown sugar instead. Police, instead of what? Caller, cocaine. Police, yeah." The post attracted numerous comments from Facebook users who appeared to greatly enjoy the sweet scam. "Who was your dealer, Mary Poppins?" asked one. While another joked, "Nothing beats a sugar high." A third said, "200 big ones for some sugar. That's an offer not to be sniffed at." With a fourth adding, "Coke really is full of sugar these days." Anyway, authorities say an Oklahoma man stole a Pepsi truck as the driver was unloading soda in the back. The driver jumped out of the back when he felt his rig move. A trail of soda spilled out as the truck drove off. Police say Stephen Hart told them that he was trying to get to the airport after an argument with his girlfriend. The girlfriend says he was searching for her. When police caught up to the truck, it was stopped in traffic. Hart jumped out and started to run off. He was arrested as the rig rolled back into a school bus. No children were on board, by the way. Hart is being held on pending charges that include larceny and attempted escape from the county jail as he was being booked into custody. Now, this is not what they mean by the Pepsi challenge. You know, everything's going wrong in Stephen Hart's life. He steals a Pepsi truck, spilling its contents all over the road. On the way to the airport, he gets stuck in traffic. When he jumps out of the truck, it rolls backwards into a school bus, and he failed his attempt to escape from the police at a jail. Perhaps he and his girlfriend just aren't meant to be together.
"You got the right one, baby."
Yeah. Thanks, Ray. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, police in Tulsa, Oklahoma are searching for a man who crashed his car into the glass doors of an adult novelty shop, then ran inside and stole lingerie and sex toys. Police say the heist at Hustler Hollywood happened at around 3 a.m. Monday when the store was closed. It was captured on video. Employees discovered the damage later Monday morning when they came into work. Police officer Gene Pierce says that authorities believe the man knew the store's layout because he ran directly to one section to steal the items, which were valued at about $300 to $400. Pierce says the greater cost is likely the damage to the glass doors. Authorities have not yet identified the man. No arrests have been made. Well, since he was familiar with the store's layout, I'm sure he'll come again. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? New York Times bestselling author James Geary joins us to talk about his book entitled Wit's End: What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. It's a whimsical book that explores every facet of wittiness, from its role in innovation to why puns demonstrate the essence of creativity. James is also the deputy curator at Harvard University's Nieman Foundation for Journalism. He joins us on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, James.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I want to ask, first of all, your subtitle, What is Wit, How It Works, and Why We Need It? That's my first question. There you go.
Well, that's actually three questions, but I'll answer the third question first. Why we need it? I think when we tend to think of wit, we typically think of it as like being funny, and that is certainly part of what wit is about. But I think more than making jokes, wit is really essentially making connections between things that may seem different on the surface, but have some kind of hidden similarity and or hidden relationship. And I think, so from that point of view, wit is more like a kind of intelligence than it is a sense of humor, a state of mind, really. And I think why we need wit is because so many of the challenges facing us in politics, society, the environment, the really complex, interconnected issues. If you just think about the environment, for example, you know, it involves politics, economics, socioeconomics, psychology, all kinds of things are involved in figuring out how to prevent catastrophic climate change. And to solve a problem like that, I think we literally need our wits about us. And wit will help us make connections between all those different things and come up with, hopefully, surprising novel solutions.
So you definitely believe that there is a difference between wit and humor, or a sense of humor?
Yeah, I do. I think like a sense of humor makes you laugh, but I think when you're witty or you make a witticism, it makes you laugh, but it also makes you think. And I think wit has a kind of twist to it, or some kind of reversal that I think plain humor doesn't really have. So like one example that illustrates it very well for me, I think, is, you know, the old slapstick joke, a guy's walking down the street, there's a banana peel on the sidewalk, he steps on it, slips and falls down, and we all laugh. And that's humor, because it's funny to see someone fall down. So, but a witty take on that situation would be, guy walking down the street, there's a banana peel on the sidewalk, he sees it, steps over it, and as he's continuing to walk down the street, he turns around to admire his accomplishment and then falls through an open manhole cover. So the latter example for me is wit, because it has that kind of surprise twist in the ending that kind of makes you think that someone who's too kind of full of themselves, and he's very happy that he's avoided the banana peel, he falls into the manhole. So I think that's a good illustration of how humor is different than wit.
Since you say there is a difference between the two, can a person be witty and not have a sense of humor?
Oh, wow. I don't think so. Because I think wit also involves being aware of multiple things at once, and of the ironies and contradictions in life. And I think if you have a kind of witty state of mind and you're attuned to that kind of thing, I think just part of, if only for self-preservation, you have to have a sense of humor. Because I think laughter is a very healthy way to deal with some of the, you know, some of the challenges and the problems that we face in daily life. So I think it would be hard to be witty without also having a pretty healthy sense of humor.
When you decided to write this book, who were you thinking of as far as your readers were concerned? Who were you writing the book for?
Well, I kind of write the book for anybody who's just curious about language and wordplay and how the mind works. And the book is written in a kind of unusual way because each chapter deals with a different form of wit. And each chapter is written in a different style. Like there's a couple chapters on verbal wit, and one of those chapters is written as a rap song, so the lyrics to a rap song. Another chapter is written in the form of a dialogue, like a scene from a play between two characters. There's a chapter on how wit might work in the brain, and that's written like a scientific paper. There's a chapter on the spirituality of wit, written like a sermon, like you might hear in church on a Sunday. And so I guess I wrote the book for people just who enjoy playing with ideas, and the book itself is very playful. And I hope it's more than occasionally funny. So anybody who's interested in ideas and how language works and interacts with psychology, and also it's kind of practical, you know, because if you think about how we use the word wit in daily language, we live by our wits, or we're quick-witted or outwitted or dim-witted. I think living by your wits is a very practical kind of way to approach the world, and that's also what the book is about. It's not a theoretical, abstract, or academic book. It's very practical and focused on situations that we all confront, you know, every day.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction puns, and I think puns are definitely in two camps, those who love them and those who hate them, and I don't think there is a line in between. Your thought on puns and why they are so diametrically opposed to some people as far as humor is concerned, and why some people really love them.
Yeah, you're right. Some people just can't stand puns, and you know, historically they've been called the lowest form of wit, and you know, people tend to disdain people who make puns and get annoyed at them. That's why my family often gets annoyed with me, because I happen to love puns and I make a lot of them. But I think they're actually not the lowest, but the highest form of wit. And it's for the reason that we were talking about earlier, because puns are like the simplest, but really in a way a very profound example of making those kind of connections that I think are the essence of wit. And in fact, really are the essence of creativity too. So if I made a pun, and I will, and I beg forgiveness of your listeners in advance. If you've seen one shopping center, you've seen a mall. You've seen a mall. Now that can make you laugh or groan, but you immediately get the connection, right? No one has to explain that pun to you, or, you know, it's like explaining a joke. If you have to explain the joke, it couldn't really be a very good joke to begin with. And what I think puns show is that our minds kind of are instinctively making these connections all the time. And people who make puns notice those connections, but people who get puns, whether they enjoy puns or despise them, they are also making those connections. And the connection is the same. And so I think in a kind of weird way, a person who makes a pun is just as witty as a person who gets a pun, because they're making the identical connection. And that, for me, is a kind of very simple but powerful example of just the way that wit works in the brain, and it kind of works all the time, whether we are aware of it or not.
I have a theory as to why some people don't like puns. And that is,
I would love to hear it.
I think it has to deal with the punster, and I'm not assuming that you're one of those, but the thing I find with some punsters is it's like ODing on drugs. They don't know when to stop.
I totally agree with you, and I think that's one of the the dangers of wit and witticisms and loving puns is that you get so taken up with the whole process and the fun that you have in making the puns, and you forget your listeners may not have the same kind of enjoyment that you are. So I think wit and puns are great, but like everything else, in moderation. So I think that's a good analysis.
In writing a book like this, have you studied in any way, shape, or form children? Because I find it very interesting to watch a child's sense of humor or wit develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And if you think about children's sense of humor, what are some of the first jokes that children both get and start to make? It's puns. The very, very, very simple puns. What's the favorite band of pencils? Led Zeppelin. That's a very simple pun, but just that simple relation between pencils and lead and the double meaning, that's how children actually learn. In fact, that's how we all learn. We learn by comparing things and bringing things into relation with each other. And children, when they're learning and their brains are evolving, they naturally start making these kind of relations and connections. And the first kind of jokes that they really understand and appreciate and are able to make themselves are puns, very simple puns. And that, again, is evidence of how kind of fundamental that punning, witty ability to make connections is to our intellectual and creative growth. And I think the advantage the kids have is they're not feeling, they're not apologizing for their puns. They haven't been indoctrinated into the anti-pun view. So they feel kind of more open and freewheeling to make those kind of associations.
I'm a little older than you, so as a young child, I predate Led Zeppelin. So the first one I remember is what was Beethoven's favorite fruit?
Oh, you're gonna have to tell me.
Banana.
That is brilliant. And that's a perfect radio pun. Well done.
The book is called Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. It's written by James Gary. James, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
James Geary, author of Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0497, and you'll find links to James's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. What are the chances you'll die if the government enacts one more new regulation? Believe it or not, the federal government asks economists to answer that question quite often when deciding whether or not to increase regulations. For example, when airport security measures after 9/11 were increased and made air travel more inconvenient, it led to a higher number of estimated deaths from car accidents. Now, a noted expert in risk analysis has published a paper entitled Death by Regulation: How Regulations Can Increase Mortality Risk. Vanderbilt economist Kip Viscusi says, regulation is more likely to result in more people dying than it saves if its cost per life saved falls above the range of $75 to $100 million. Let's be fair, it may be surprising to hear this, but evaluations of a regulation's mortality risk can actually help the government save lives by getting rid of ineffective regulations. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about psychopaths and sociopaths. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Here in a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Right now, a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. 78-year-old John Flickner was being evicted for using medical marijuana, which is legal in New York, and Deb Fuzera was trying to help him as the service coordinator for the government-subsidized apartment building where Flickner lived. After all, that was her job. At his suggestion, Fusera called the Buffalo News to publicize his plight. The local paper's coverage of Flickner's eviction embarrassed LHP Capital, which owns the building, into revisiting its strict drug policy and letting the man move back into his apartment. But LHP complained about the negative attention and asked Fusera's employer, a subcontractor it had hired, to get rid of her. And they fired her. Wow. Apparently, they don't want to employ someone to help people who's actually going to, you know, do their job and help people. Boy, if they were worried about negative attention before, buckle up, folks. Buckle up.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
Deputies at the LaForge Parish Jail in Louisiana found a gun concealed in the buttocks of a man during a search. Police spotted suspicious activity at the home of Lori Dupuy. When the officers approached to investigate, Dupuy gave a false name and then fled the scene. The officers then questioned Justin Savoy, who was also at the home. During a pat-down of Savoy, officers discovered a concealed handgun, marijuana, and a pipe used for smoking marijuana. While Savoy was undergoing a strip search during his processing, deputies found a small gun concealed in his buttocks. Savoy was charged with first offense possession of marijuana, possession of drug paraphernalia, and improper registration of a firearm. Surprisingly, he was not charged with improper transportation of a firearm. Maybe keeping a gun in your butt is legal in Louisiana. I don't know. Okay, my heart goes out to the poor corrections officer who has to conduct these strip searches to find the hidden gun in the first place. I really hope that he has some kind of exciting hobby at night so he can forget what he has to do on the job during the day. Anyway, let's get to our final guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? A Netflix documentary series and feature film timed to the 30th anniversary of the execution of Ted Bundy has renewed interest in one of the most notorious serial killers in modern-day American history. Dr. Nicole Kelly calls Bundy a charming cheater psychopath. And with at least one in 25 people falling on the sociopath spectrum, Dr. Kelly says it's important to learn how to protect yourself and your loved ones from these pathological predators. She's the author of Charming Cheaters, Protect Yourself from the Sociopaths, Psychopaths, and Sexopaths in Your Life. She joins us on the line right now from Nashville. Hi, Nicole.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Right now, I want to start off by talking about the subtitle of your book, and that is Protect Yourself from Sociopaths, Psychopaths, and Sexopaths. Some people might not be aware of what the difference is between certainly the first two, if not all three. So can you share that?
Absolutely. So really, there's a spectrum. It kind of goes from monster manipulator to just outright monster. So psychopaths score a very high score on a scale that can only be done by professionals, but sociopaths are more likely to be out and about and running our country, our companies, and our churches. So sociopaths often have better self-control, better impulse control, and they're better able to wear a mask to fit into society. Psychopaths are more likely to be in jail, although not all of them are. But 20% of prisoners are felt to be psychopaths.
It's interesting you mentioned sociopaths and some of the jobs that they have. They're definitely all around us. And full disclosure, certainly in my business. So
yes.
So, you know, from that degree, they're not necessarily all bad, but they have to be watched. Now, I know from reading information about you, one of the reasons you've written this book and one of the reasons you're sharing this perspective and your medical background to share this with your book is that you as yourself were involved with someone who treated you badly, so to speak. Tell us
yes,
about that.
A sociopath embezzled over $700,000 from my medical practice.
Wow.
And, while she was embezzling for me, she was also on the Ashley Madison Cheaters website and dating five different married men all at the same time, while none of them knew about each other, including her husband.
Wow. And I think the scary thing is, and again, why your book is probably so important, is you're a learned, educated woman, and you fell for something like this. What chances do the rest of us have in everyday walks of life if someone like yourself can be a victim?
Exactly. And it's because, I mean, they are the charming cheaters. They put on a mask to be exactly what you want them to be. And, I mean, you know, people are not fooled by sociopaths and psychopaths because they're stupid. I mean, it's because you want to believe. I mean, they often, you know, accompany their manipulations with false flattery, with, I mean, just the best stories you can possibly imagine. They have superficial charm and are just the most exciting people you've ever met. I mean, you want to believe their falsehoods because, I mean, it feels good.
And I guess it follows the old saying, if it's too good to be true, it's not true. But having said that, with all of your knowledge, with all of your awareness that you're trying to share with all of us, what happens to the people out there who are just charming, but not necessarily psychopaths or sociopaths? Don't they then become victims because people don't believe what warmth they might actually have?
Well, if they don't turn out to be pathological liars who are manipulating you for their own personal gain, then, I mean, their charm is great and well-founded. I mean, one of the most important lessons I've learned for this nightmare of an experience is that trust is something that needs to be earned. I mean, it's fine for us to offer a certain amount of trust to, you know, strangers, people on the bus. You know, we can be kind to strangers, but someone who has access to your heart, to your finances, to your children, people like that need to earn your trust. That isn't something to be given away lightly. We need to listen to our gut and to notice the red flags that are usually are present if only we pay attention.
Are sociopaths and psychopaths aware that they are sociopaths and psychopaths?
Some are and some aren't. Oftentimes they realize that they're different. But oftentimes they have this almost delusional type of thing where they'll believe their own lies. And they believe that because they don't have empathy, they don't have a conscience, everyone else doesn't too. Which is funny because this is why it's so hard for empathetic people to recognize them, is because we can't turn our empathy or conscience off. So being able to imagine someone who doesn't have that is just hard to even fathom. But the same is true for them. They think we're all pretending to care about each other and to have empathy and connection and true empathetic love. But for them, I mean, their brain connections are not the same as ours. Their perception of reality is different. And that's the point that I think the majority of the public doesn't understand. Once we understand, I mean, it's not that we need to, you know, burn them all at the stake or, you know, put them all in jail or all this type of stuff. We just need to understand that they are not functioning on the same reality that the rest of us are. They see the world as a game, and we are their pawns to manipulate. Every time they interact with anyone, they are summing up, what are your vulnerabilities, and how can I use them to get what I want? That's just how they are. That's how their brains are made. And once the empathetic majority recognizes that, we can change our world for the better.
Well, I was about to ask, you know, if you say there's at least 1 in 25 people falling on the psychopath spectrum, that means that chances are we have to deal with them, if not in our own lives, in work, if not in our own families. It's not a situation where we can just avoid them. So how do we deal with them?
So accountability and transparency. So oftentimes, one of the most important things is not always holding your first impression as the end-all and be-all. We want our first impression to be right, but oftentimes when that charming cheater gives us evidence later on that they are not the amazing person that they first presented them to be, we make excuses for them because we so want our first impression to be correct. But if we catch someone in multiple lies, this is a huge red flag that, you know, who knows? Maybe they're a sociopath, maybe they're a psychopath. Putting a label on them doesn't matter. But this is someone you need to be watching and protecting yourself and your loved ones from the ability to control and manipulate you.
But again, there's how do you avoid falling under their spell? And the reason I bring that up is one of the reasons I wanted to contact you in the first place is the news I mentioned in the introduction of the Netflix documentary series and also a feature film that is timed with the 30th anniversary of the execution of Ted Bundy. Netflix has come out with a statement saying you shouldn't be glorifying this person because people are seem to be falling in love with Ted Bundy, who was an executed mass murderer, a serial killer. I mean, here's a person who's been dead for years, and it's, he seems to attract a following. Never mind someone who might be a sociopath or psychopath who's alive and out in the world today. How do we stop falling for these people?
Well, and part of it is, I mean, a lot of that is issues with our own psyches. Our own self-esteem and self-confidence that we so want to believe in this illusion that we allow ourselves to be tricked and manipulated. I mean, serial killers should not be idealized. I mean, that's the whole trap of wanting, having the hope that people end up getting duped by a sociopath and then suffer the consequences later. And with a psychopath serial killer, it could be your life.
Is it possible that we, and I'm, by we I'm talking about the non-psychopaths, the non-sociopaths, we are hardwired to want to try and fix something? I mean, you hear stories going back since the beginning of time of women who want to date the bad boy or guys who want to date the bad girl. And I think part of that situation is they hope to fix something in said person that will in a way help them make feel better about themselves, that they fixed somebody.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, and what you're describing is what the sociopaths and psychopaths, I mean, use so dearly is they're using our empathy against us. I mean, our empathy makes us want to help them, to help change them, to help cure them. And unfortunately, that's not possible. Their brain chemistry, their brain connections are different than the rest of ours. And we can hope and want to put our empathy and our love into them, you know, forever, but it's not going to change their brains.
A lot to learn in your book. The book is Charming Cheaters, Protect Yourself from the Sociopaths, Psychopaths, and Sexopaths in Your Life. It's written by Dr. Nicole Kelly. Nicole, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. And any of your listeners, if they purchase the book, they can get my novel for free. Just check it out on my website, NicoleKellyMD.com.
We'll have them check that indeed. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Nicole Kelly, author of Charming Cheaters, Protect Yourself from the Sociopaths, Psychopaths, and Sexopaths in Your Life. As you just heard her mention, you can get her novel for free when you purchase her book on her website. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page number for this program, which is show number 0497, and you'll find links to Nicole's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming up in just a few moments, but I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you right here, right now. Authorities say a Florida man stole collectible coins worth tens of thousands of dollars, then ran them through grocery store change machines that returned just a fraction of their value. 40-year-old Shane Anthony Meal of Riviera Beach told investigators he stole the commemorative presidential dollar coins and other items from a North Palm Beach office in December. The coins were worth $33,000. A Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office arrest report says Meal sold some coins for a few thousand dollars, and he ran many through change machines that only produced their face value. Meal was charged on February 1st with grand theft, along with unrelated drug charges. He was released on February 4th after posting bond. I'm assuming he didn't post his bail in change. You know, I could have easily made this guy the idiot of the day, but I did not. Instead, I put him, shall we say, idiot adjacent. Which means, boys and girls, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The moral of this story? If you're going to rob a bank in February, target Florida or Texas. 37-year-old Jason McEnrod was making his getaway after robbing the Bangor Savings Bank in Waterville, Maine on February 12th. He scrambled across four lanes of traffic and into a restaurant parking lot, where he slipped on the ice and sprawled on the ground right in front of Maine State Police Special Agent Glenn Lang, who was sitting in his parked car. Lang didn't know the bank had been robbed, but he became suspicious when the money and the gun that Jason had stashed in his jacket pocket spilled onto the parking lot. The weapon turned out to be a BB gun. Lang tackled Jason and took him into custody as police were responding at the bank. Jason McEnrod was charged with robbery and terrorizing. Now, why? Oh, why? Would you not consider weather conditions when planning a bank robbery? And why would you not consider proper footwear and clothing if you're planning to rob a bank in winter in Maine? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0497. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0497. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.